In the midst of darkness, we light a candle. In the midst of fear and despair, we call forth hope. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my pleasure to wish you all Merry Christmas. Welcome to these services of the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is wonderful to be gathered with all of you on this dark and holy night. This night we gather in mystery, in story and in song, as people have down through the millennia in northern parts of our hemisphere. The harvest is in, the nights are dark and long. People gather around fires to tell stories and sing songs of hope and miracle and joy, to remember that the sun returns, and so does spring. What a mystery it is to know that for 2,000 years, people have gathered to tell the story of a baby born in a manger, heralded by angels and visited by shepherds and kings. It is even more of a mystery to know that humans have told similar stories back for longer than we even know. Stories very much like this one, births of miraculous babies, destined to change the world. A mystery that these stories have sustained us, that is truly a mystery, that these type of stories reverberate in the human heart. Children are born. Children change lives. They ignite sparks of hope. And gifts are given, laid carefully next to hope, so that hope burns more brightly. Let us today sing and tell the stories of hope and its joy. And let us begin. Our first story is from the Reverend Carl Scovel, who served in King's Chapel in Boston from 1967 to 1999. He writes, "I like to think that after many years of living together, our family has developed a certain sense of equilibrium, a certain ease with one another. At times, of course, differences arise, and occasionally an act of outright rebellion. But as the reigning, benevolent despot of the King's Chapel Parsonage at 63 Beacon Street, I like to think that we get on very well. I don't pretend that all differences are resolved. For example, I grew up in a house without central heating and have always felt that a cool house is a healthy house, impervious to cold and conducive to the flow of blood. My daughters do not share that sentiment. Last Christmas, when I refused to turn up the heat, our younger daughter exclaimed, 'Behold, a decree went out from Carl Augustus that all the world would be frozen, and each went to her own room to be frozen.' That Christmas Eve, we held our traditional services of songs and scripture, but I added a small new feature. On the old communion table, we placed a creche. We had never had a creche at King's Chapel before, and I wasn't sure how people would take to it. I hoped that the muted colors of the terracotta figures might soften any Puritan objections. We went through the services, and I heard nothing but words of appreciation. I was relieved and thought perhaps we'd started a new tradition. I had finished greeting the crowd after the late service when a deacon approached me with a worried look and said, 'I think you'd better come down to the chancel.' 'Why, what's the matter, Tom?' I asked. 'One of the pieces of the creche has been stolen.' 'Which one?' I asked. 'The Christ child,' he answered. Oh, Lord, I thought, here we put this out for the first time, and arg! We got to the chancel and looked at the creche, and sure as shooting, the baby was gone. I looked under the table and around the chancel floor. Nothing. Then back to the creche, and I saw the edge of a tiny slip of paper protruding from beneath the figure of Mary. I drew the paper out and found the following message printed neatly in pencil. We've got Jesus. Turn the heat up at 63 Beacon Street, and you can have him back for the morning service. The heat went up at the parsonage. The infant reappeared, and everything returned to normal. Well, not quite. The benevolent despot of 63 Beacon Street sits less certainly upon his throne. No monarch, indeed no despot, can ever quite be sure of his role when the child has been born.
For so the children come, and so they have been coming, always the same way. They come created by our seeds, our souls, our love. No angels herald their beginnings. No prophets predict their future courses. No wise men see a star to show where to find the babe that will save humankind. Yet each night a child is born is a holy night. Parents sitting beside their children's cribs feel glory in the sight of new life beginning. They ask, where and how will this new life end, or will it ever end? Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping.
And Alexis will share with us in the bleak midwinter.
Thank you.
Went out a decree from Caesar Augusta that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, into the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child.
A Christmas story. A woman sat at the kitchen table, the table blanketed by snowmen floating on the blue tablecloth, and rested her head in her hands. Her teenage son came in and sat beside her. "Mom, I heard you talking to Aunt Sue about spending all the Christmas money to get the car repaired. Please, stop worrying. I don't even want any Christmas presents. It's all just a plot by the stores to sell more stuff anyway. Why do people even give gifts on Christmas? What do presents have to do with baby Jesus anyway?" Mom wiped away a tear and gave her son a smile, appreciating that he was trying to make her feel better. And said, "Well, now that's a good question. I mean, I know you're just trying to take my mind off of our money troubles and my dreams of the Christmas morning that I want to create for you. But what if we really try to answer that question? What do presents have to do with baby Jesus?" And so her son thought for a minute and said, "Well, I guess it's because Jesus got those presents from the three kings or the three magi. I think they were like astrologers or something, and they followed the star. What did they bring? Gold and frankincense and myrrh?" And the mom said, "Well, have you learned anything about what that might mean in your Unitarian Universalist youth group?" And he said, "Well, I think I did. Like, those gifts were the kinds of things that would be brought to honor a king or a god. This, you know, valuable gold and these rare frankincense, which was like burned in worship kind of places, and healing myrrh. And so this is the kind of thing that would be brought to present in a palace to a king. But these magi brought them to present them, like, not to a throne in a palace, but to, you know, a babe in his mother's arms in a manger. And, if, you know, this is a baby, not a powerful king. So that's the thing. It, like, turns everything on its head, you see? Because these magi saw that this baby had a different kind of power, not the power of kings and despots like Carl Scovel with his cold, cold house, but the power of love and peace and a whole new way to be with things.
And so Mom thought, wow, I'm really glad we go to that Unitarian Universalist Fellowship because it seems you've learned a few things. And she thought, well, it sounds like those magi saw something in Jesus. And the gifts they gave were symbolic of how he would grow and make a difference. So what if we give each other those kind of gifts? And the son said, okay, yeah. The deal is we spend no money. We buy nothing new. And the mom agreed. And so the mom thought, what do I see in my son that he doesn't really see in himself or trust in himself? And she said, I know. He's a writer. He writes so creatively and wonderfully, but he doesn't really believe that about himself. But I know that he really wants to be a writer. And so what she did was she went around her house. She found two or three of those old spiral notebooks, you know, the ones that we have that have like three pages of notes and then the rest is blank. She tore out those three pages of notes and filed them away in case they were important. And then she had three blank spiral notebooks. She got every pen from her purse and the car and the sofa, and she tested them all out to see which ones worked. And she remembered that her son liked a fine point, so she found the ones that wrote the best with the finest points. She collected those. She went to her computer and Googled writing prompts, which are the kinds of sentences that get you started to think about writing. She went to the library and she checked out writing books and copied exercises that she thought her son might like. She wrote these writing prompts and some quotes, and she drew some pictures that she thought might spark some ideas. And she put them all in a box, and she wrapped the box in a map that had kind of gotten partly ripped, and so it wasn't really good for a map anymore, but there was part that was still smooth, and she wrapped it, and it symbolized all the places he could go. And she put all these writing prompts in there, and she piled it all together and wrapped it up. In the meantime, what her son was doing was thinking, gosh, my mom seems so low and doesn't really trust herself because she lost that job and the company went out of business and she's not getting a new job. But I know she's great. I know she's done all kinds of great things. And so he went into the attic and he went into the garage and he found things that he thought would let her remember how great she was. He actually found the speech that she wrote to get elected vice president of her high school class that promised peer mediation to resolve conflicts. And he went to the same high school that she went to, and they were still doing peer mediation today. Wow. He found a newspaper clipping about a food drive that she had organized for Thanksgiving, the year of the tornado, and then he found on the kitchen counter a brochure for Our Neighbor's Pantry, the organization that still exists that came out of that food drive so many years ago. He found the name badge from the leadership training that her company had sent her to. He found the picture of her with the minister at the ribbon cutting for the new religious exploration wing that the Capital campaign she had run paid for. And then he found flyers from two or three auctions that she had helped organize at church. He found a photo of the booth that she made at the winter fair for his elementary school. She found a picture of her helping him learn, of him learning how to ride a bike. And then he found a certificate from the bike-a-thon that he had rode in for rare disease research because he was such a good bike rider. He also found the Christmas card from the family that she had taken care of the autistic son all through college. And there was a picture in this year's card of him getting his PhD in applied mathematics. He put all this together in a book, and he had emails and texts from her friends that he put in because he had written to them all and said, give me some good stuff for my mom. He put it all in a book. He couldn't buy for a new scrapbook, so he used an old Christmas storybook, and he pasted things in it, and it was all Christmassy, and it reminded his mom of who she really was and how persistent and creative she was. So Christmas morning, they each opened their package, and we're like, wow, that's how she sees me? a new cover letter for the job that she really wanted, that she hadn't gotten the interview for, but this cover letter was bound to get their attention, and he started his first spiral notebook with his first writing prompt. And they had the merriest Christmas they could remember.
Well, let's back up to those kings and camels for a minute here, because the camels really need a chance to speak. Here's what they have to say. Of course, they never consulted us. They were wise men, kings, star readers, and we merely transportation. They simply loaded us with gifts and turned us toward the star. I ask you, what would a king know of choosing presents for a child? Had they ever even seen a baby born to such simple folks? So naked of pretension, so open to the wind? What would such a child care for perfumes and gold? Far better to have asked one born in the desert, tested by wind and sand. We saw what he would need. The gift of perseverance, of continuing on the hard way, making do with what there is, living on what we have inside. The gift of holding up under a burden, of lifting another with grace, of kneeling to accept the weight of what we must bear. Our footsteps could have rocked him with the rhythm of the road, shown him comfort in a harsh land, the dignity of continually moving forward. But the wise men were not wise enough to ask. They simply left their trinkets and admired the rustic view. Before you knew it, we were turned around again toward home, carrying men only half willing to be amazed. But never mind. We saw the baby. We felt him reach for the bright tassels of our gear. We desert amblers have our ways of seeing what you chatterers must miss. That child at heart knows something about following a star. Our gifts are given. Have no doubt, his life will bear the print of who we are.
Christians and secular people all over the world tell the ancient, ancient story of a desperate, homeless refuge parent and their newborn this time of year. We tell how the angels and the shepherd and the wise men bowed in awe before this baby who would one day preach love and welcome instead of contempt and hate, and love and justice instead of oppression. An angel proclaimed, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people." The story of this baby's birth and life is the story of survival and love against all of the odds. Somehow a baby is born in a barn and forced to flee for his life, growing up as a refugee in Egypt. Incomprehensibly, somehow, he chose love instead of hate, and as an adult, denounced by everyone in power, chose courage over fear. This is a story of hope. Hope that people can choose love over hate, and courage over fear, even when life circumstances make that exceptionally difficult. Every night a child is born is a holy night, we say as Unitarian Universalists. Indeed, as Unitarian Universalist minister Carl Spovel tells us, no monarch, indeed no despot, can ever be quite sure of his rule when a child has been born. Babies are full of hope.
They are full of so many possibilities. And power is a truly tricky thing. History shows it's never as solid as it sometimes seems. Now, as our government descends into a chaos many of us could not actually have imagined, as our climate shifts in ways that so many of us worked so hard to stop, and as people flee the violence of their countries and huddle at our borders awaiting asylum, as discrimination gets more violent and overt, we need hope. And we need to appreciate the mysterious world of unknown possibilities, possibilities triggered by love and courage against power. The night a child is born is a holy night. That means the night each one of us was born. Each person in this room was a holy night. And most of us have been taught all sorts of nonsense about our own unworthiness, like the woman in today's story. And we forget the gifts that we have to offer. The wise man, as the camel tells us, offered silly things for a baby, gold, perfume, oil, but it was all that they knew to give. And surely when that family fled, the gifts offered some financial security. And then there was the sturdier gifts of the camels, perseverance, holding up under the weight of burdens, clearly essential gifts for the baby who would spend his childhood fleeing death and living in who knows what kind of misery. These were important gifts for a child who would change people for centuries as they took for their own his messages of love and justice and his courage as he stood up against power. It is indeed a mystery how this all happens. But we are each, every person, is given gifts, and we are given the opportunity to share them. This Christmas, I want all of us to remember the gifts that we were born with, the gifts that you brought into your holy night. Everyone has hearts that can love, bodies that can create, minds that think in different and wondrous ways, spirits that experience awe, souls that hold us close to others, a faith that reminds us that we can love the world and we can bless it. And it's all those gifts that each one of you is personally given. Gifts that we can lay, like those people in the story that Leslie told us, the gifts of writing, the gifts of organization and love, that we can lay next to the fires of hope, and it gives it flame. Maybe the camel's gifts are ours, those gifts of perseverance, of continuing in the hard way, of making do with what there is, of living on what you have on the inside. Or perhaps you have other gifts that you can offer. Friendliness, hospitality, humor, empathy, steadiness, organization, creative ideas. All of our lives are shrouded in mystery. But they sparkle with possibilities, with gifts, with hope. And that is the blessing I hope you all have on this Christmas. We will have a few moments of silence and come out with harp music. Thank you.
Thank you.